You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. These findings likely won't come as a surprise because either we or someone we know are going through this. Within the past decade, overdose deaths, depression among youth and adults, as well as anxiety has been on the rise across the country and California, which has only been accelerated during the pandemic. The need for behavioral and mental health resources is greater than ever, in large part also due to a shift in a collective awareness and acceptance. But that only goes so far. California's behavioral health workforce is struggling to keep up with the demand as the expectation from the state to provide these services continues to grow. Counties across the state have a behavioral health agency, which typically serves low-income residents with serious mental illness, substance abuse, or a combination of both. The association that represents California's county behavioral health departments commissioned research to better understand this unmet need that is only expected to rise. That report was published this month out of UC San Francisco. Janet Kaufman is a professor of health policy at UCSF and co-author of this research. We're also joined by Michelle Cabrera with County Behavioral Health Directors Association. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Thank you so much, Vicky.
Yes, thank you very much, Vicky.
So, Professor Kaufman, I want to start with you. We're going to dive into the new research in just a moment, but you've been researching the state's healthcare workforce for more than 25 years. How have conversations and really the focus on behavioral and mental health changed in that time?
So, great question, Vicky. You know, I would say that really it's been in the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years that there's really been, I think, a shift to greater attention to the behavioral health workforce and its needs. We did our first really comprehensive report on this in 2018, and then were invited by the County Behavioral Health Directors Association to work on this report. So yeah, I think there's been, you know, an increased focus and increased, I think, recognition of how important mental health is to our overall well-being, as well as recognition of just the increased number of people who are struggling with either substance use disorder or mental health conditions, or sometimes both.
Right. And your research found that 1 in 5 adults in the state has a mental illness, and this spans from 2018 to 2019. And about a quarter of these adults had unmet needs that you're talking about for mental health services. But that actually goes up to an estimated 64-65% of adolescents with major depression. This can be kind of a chunky question, but how do people typically access behavioral health care?
Well, I mean, they can do it in multiple ways, but often, I would say often people first come to their primary care provider, you know, particularly if they're having physical symptoms. And then, you know, where they go from there in some ways depends on their type of, you know, insurance. Some people, particularly the people that the county serve, are lower income people who will go to county agency, either to community based organization that contracts with the county, maybe to a federally qualified health center, depending on their need.
When you're, we're talking and, about this workforce,
yeah, Michelle. Let's let Michelle add some texture here.
Hi, Michelle with the County Behavioral Health Directors Association. I mean, I think this question about when people seek care and how is really fundamental, right? So we often talk about help-seeking behaviors. Does the person have awareness that there's a need or a desire for help in this way? And then do they know where to go, where to start in accessing that? So for individuals with private insurance, as Janet mentioned, they might start with their primary care provider or reach out to their health plan and get a directory or a list of providers who might be taking their insurance or not, or they might just sort of open up a directory and go in search of a provider who may or may not be covered under their insurance plan. For people with Medicaid or Medi-Cal in California who are low income, there's certainly a robust set of benefits that are covered across the continuum and provided either through their Medi-Cal managed care plan, or in the case of individuals who have more significant mental health needs or need for drug treatment or alcohol treatment, they can access that through the County Behavioral Health Agency. And, you know, connecting them to those services often comes either because they've touched the system in some way through an emergency department visit or a visit to their primary care provider, or in many cases for people with serious mental illness and substance use disorders, we're actually affirmatively like going out into the community, doing outreach and trying to connect people back to our resources through public awareness efforts, et cetera. So we really seek out our clients as much as we try to be there for our clients when they seek help out with us.
Given that you lead the County Behavioral Health Directors Association, many may not have heard of this association. Who do you serve?
So our members are the department and agency heads for the various county behavioral health safety net agencies. And counties are in the role, as Janet mentioned, primarily of serving individuals with Medi-Cal with specialty needs. But we also provide kind of a broader safety net in the community. So oftentimes we do touch people with private insurance or no insurance at all because we are safety net providers with that expertise in mental health and substance use treatment.
So given, Michelle, that on the one hand, there's obviously more awareness, there's more acceptance on a societal level, but also through policy, governments, healthcare systems have been investing in behavioral health. How has this need grown over time, especially for the counties that you represent?
Well, a few things are going on, and I think you covered it really brilliantly at the beginning, right? So obviously the pandemic sort of ushered in an awareness, a conversation, but it also triggered conditions, right? So individuals who turned to alcohol or maybe drug use in that time, you know, we know that you spiked during the pandemic. And also for many people, the isolation, the lack of social connection and other conditions related to the pandemic, such as grief from losing relatives, really deepened anxiety, depression, and other conditions. And that was all sort of sitting on top of a cultural moment societally, where, as you mentioned, folks were starting to sort of develop a language around mental health. And some of the stigma has started to peel away. I wouldn't say that we're all the way there yet, but, you know, there's start, and we especially see this among young people, right? Young people who really, I think, are far ahead of some of the adults in their lives in being able to identify that they may have needs and articulate that they want that kind of help. You know, in prior generations, no one might recognize it, including the child or youth themselves, until they were much further along in their development. Mm-hmm. So that is both exciting, but it's also sort of caught our system at this moment when there's so much disruption happening because of external factors, right? Telehealth has really revolutionized our systems in the last several years, but there's also a ton more market competition, and we're trying to expand the types of services that we are asking of the public system at a time when, again, the resources from a staffing perspective really aren't there. So there's a lot of shifting happening as increased demand is going up.
Okay, so Professor Kaufman, let's get to your research. The report is broken into six parts. It spans, you know, roughly 80 pages. What are the main conclusions that you want listeners to understand?
Right. So I think one of the main, you know, conclusions is the county system is really, really struggling. We did one part of our research was a survey of Michelle's members, and many of them are really, you know, struggling with recruitment and retention really across the board. You know, some professions like psychiatry, especially challenging, but across the board. And we asked them, well why are you struggling? What do you think is, you know, driving this? And competition, I think, number one. You know, and Michelle laid this out beautifully. The counties are, you know, competing with Kaiser, with private practices, and, you know, also competing with school districts. I mean, I think that's not always appreciated, but for child and youth behavioral health, school districts are an employer, and counties often really struggle to offer competitive wages. And so given where we are right now in California with, you know, high inflation for many things, and especially our struggles for housing. I mean, you highlighted the challenges of affordable housing up in Humboldt in your previous segment, and that's true across the board. So I think that's it. And then, you know, not only the traditional, you know, competitors, but, you know, we've seen all of these telebehavioral health startups that are, you know, not only maybe paying better, but also offering a lot more flexibility than we've traditionally offered. And also, I think to some extent, you know, because those are services that people access on their own, maybe, you know, accessing, you know, you're serving people who really are seeking help. Whereas, as Michelle noted, a lot of her members' work is going out and engaging and trying to get people ready to be treated. Mm. One last thing I'll say is that we do see in behavioral health that there's a segment of the workforce that doesn't accept any form of insurance. I'm not talking just that they don't accept Medi-Cal. They don't accept private health insurance. They only do, you know, a cash business. And, you know, you will find, you know, these folks say, you know, Marin County, other wealthier areas. And they're certainly serving people with needs. But the fact that they are in a cash only practice means there are fewer psychiatrists, fewer marriage and family therapists who can serve those folks who cannot pay out of pocket for services. And that's most of us in California.
You know, what you also found that I found interesting, because we're talking about counties that serve some of the most vulnerable people, but this workforce historically does not reflect the diversity of the state, and there are language barriers at play, right, Professor Kaufman?
Yes, we found that the majority of staff in the county agencies and the majority of behavioral health professionals in California overall only speak English. Certainly some speak Spanish and other languages, but particularly I think for Asian languages, there's not a good match with the population that our counties are serving.
Yeah.
And I think just one last thing on languages, and I think, Michelle, you're aware of that in some of your counties, that, you know, even where you've got maybe, you know, a complement of staff who speak Spanish, we are increasingly seeing folks and Latinos in California whose first language is an indigenous language, say for Mexico or Central America. And so, you know, there's very few providers who speak those languages and are able to talk to those people in their first language. Their primary language.
Right. And Michelle, it's not only languages. When we talk about diversity, I mean, it's race, it's ethnicity, but it's also sexual and gender identity as well.
That's right. And one of the things that I will highlight is that, you know, we are drawing from the pool of education and training that exists. And I think Janet's research showed that we do a really good job of recruiting individuals who are as diverse as we can, given that pool. But certainly, one of the things that we're sort of trying to highlight and uplift is that there are policy levers that we can pull to increase and improve the racial, linguistic, and sexual orientation and gender identity of the workforce so that it better matches the Medi-Cal population. This congruence between providers and the patients that they serve arguably is far more important. These preferences around cultural background, language, and understanding than it is for other kinds of healthcare, right? Because the nature of the work is that you're getting more personal with these providers, and that understanding can really make or break a clinical and other relationship where confidence is really important.
Right. And Michelle, this is also coming at a time when, you know, we have, you know, Governor Newsom's a care court, which is taking effect this year. And you served as a member of the Governor's Council of Regional Homeless Advisors. I mean, given that the County Behavioral Health Safety Net, which primarily serves low-income people, you also go out and conduct outreach. How does this growing crisis further strain the challenge of helping people? And are there other initiatives, although well-intentioned, that are contributing to this challenging forecast?
100%. I have to say, I never thought I'd see the day when, as a health policy advocate, I would, you know, groan when a new initiative was put on the table, because as much as we want to do these things, there's this massive cloud hanging over our heads. How are we going to do it? where are the people going to come from, right? And how are we going to make progress in recruitment and retention quickly enough to do the great job that we know we can do when we are fully staffed up, right? And so one of the things that I'll highlight is that the nature of the work that the safety net performs oftentimes is field-based, right? And as you mentioned, you're working with some of the most complex, most vulnerable populations. And the expectation from the public is that we're there 24/7 and out in the streets and in people's homes. Recruitment for that kind of work in 2023, when people have the option to use their education and training to be at home in their computer, on their computer, you know, it's really tough. And we empathize with sort of both the professionals who say, I have options and I want to do this work from home, but also the needs of the clients are that we are out in the community. And there are folks who are passionate about doing that community-based work who would want to do that, right? These are solvable problems, Vicky. We've been here before in terms of workforce challenges, but we really need to make those investments both on the education side. And one of the things that our members lifted up and that Janet's report reflects is that the schools need to train people to do some of this field-based work in different ways, right? Not to train people for that private practice, cash pay type business. And we need to be ready to offer competitive salaries so that people get a living wage in California.
Michelle, I mean, in the last minute or two that we have left, I mean, the whole goal of this report and research was to craft a 10-year strategic plan. Where do you see an opportunity for immediate headway?
Well, in the immediate, we really are calling on the governor to not delay the proposed investments from last year's California budget. The governor pulled together an ambitious and significant package of healthcare investments to expand those educational slots, to invest in increasing the pipeline. And because the economy appears to be softening, there was a proposal to delay it in the governor's January budget. We're really calling on the governor not only to not delay those investments, we really can't afford to because of the governor's other priorities, but to double down on those efforts and continue to expand on them, because we won't be able to really follow through with the governor's ambitious agenda and the legislature's unless we make those investments.
Professor Kaufman, I want to end with you. You hosted a webinar on these findings earlier this week. A couple hundred people showed up. What does that signal?
Well, I think that signals that there is a lot of interest and concern, that I think a lot of folks are, aware of the governor's initiatives, want them to succeed, want to learn more about this workforce. So I personally am hoping that signals a momentum to persuade the governor to, as Michelle says, double down on behavioral health workforce investment so that we can really realize the vision of providing everyone with good access to mental health and substance use disorder services.
Mm-hmm. Professor Kaufman and Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Janet Kaufman is a professor of health policy at UC San Francisco, and Michelle Cabrera is executive director of the County Behavioral Health Directors Association. They're discussing a new report out of UCSF diving into California's behavioral health workforce shortage and what the state needs to do to meet the growing need. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.